We want to take a step back in time now to 2014, when New York State intervened in a years-long battle over the care of mentally ill patients in New York City. The court said that the state was required to give mentally ill residents plans to move out of adult homes and into their own apartments, often called supported housing. It was a step towards deinstitutionalization. But in the years since, the city has been struggling to find the right balance of easing restrictions while still ensuring proper care.
I tend to take the position of more freedom is better than less freedom. But there are cases where you have to wonder. Like, you know, what are we doing?
That's Antonia Lisicki, executive director of the Association for Community Living, in a new documentary from Frontline and ProPublica called Right to Fail. The film explores the debate over giving people with severe mental illness the right to live independently and what happens when some of those individuals fall through the cracks. In the years since the court's decision, 39 residents have returned to adult homes and 33 have died, according to the New York State Office of Mental Health. Joining me now in the studio is the film's director, Tom Jennings, and Joaquin Sapien, a correspondent for the film and a ProPublica reporter. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
So let's step back a second, because we're talking about different kinds of housing for mentally ill people. Can you give us a sense, Joaquin, of what the different types of housing are?
So the settlement affected a group of people that were living in what are called adult homes, which are large apartment buildings that are essentially group homes for people with serious mental illness and other disabilities. They tend to be on the outskirts of the city. A lot of them are out on Coney Island, remote sections of Queens and Brooklyn and the Bronx and Staten Island. And they, over decades, had begun to house people who were discharged from large state psychiatric hospitals. And over time, they developed a reputation for pretty miserable conditions. There was a number of state investigations into them. And ultimately, there was a 2002 Pulitzer Prize-winning investigation by Cliff Levy of the New York Times that showed how people had really suffered in these homes. Folks were jumping off of rooftops. People died in sweltering hot rooms that lacked air conditioning. A number of them were found to be getting medical procedures that they didn't actually need so that the operators could bilk Medicaid programs. And as a result of that, there was this class action lawsuit that was filed in 2003. And after years and years of litigation, the state and the plaintiffs ultimately settled, and there was a court order to begin to offer these adult home residents a independent life in their own subsidized apartments. The idea was that they were going to be sort of desegregated and deinstitutionalized and given a chance to live on their own independently.
So far, that what you just described sounds like a well-intentioned policy. Has it gone awry?
For one thing, the state is way behind in its deadlines to move people out. And what we found is that a number of people struggled once they arrived in their own apartments. They're supposed to be a well-rounded team of sort of professionals, each with their own distinct expertise, to help these people make their transition, which is pretty dramatic, to move from an institution into their own apartment. And people have really slipped through the cracks. We've found people who have sort of seen their apartments descend into squalor. We've seen people who have been found naked and dead on freezing cold days. That's Bernard Walker, who is the focus of one of our stories. We've seen people bounce through multiple apartments after being kicked out, who have come to depend on other roommates to help take care of them. We found that one woman had been strangled to death inside of her bathtub, and that there's two people of interest who also were former adult home residents. So we've seen some pretty dire consequences of this sudden shift from a pretty rigid setting into independent living.
Tom, what do we know about independent living in terms of how it's funded, where it comes from, what it looks like today?
Well, independent living is a subset of the broad array of services and support that is given to a vast array of individuals, not just people with serious mental illness. It's homeless. It's a whole package, a whole population of people. And it's a movement that really started in the 1960s. And the realization of independent living that we were looking at really has to do with this subset of serious mentally ill who heretofore had been institutionalized. And the idea was that there was a certain debate. Do they have the capacity to live independently? And what the court settlement said was, yes, absolutely, they do. This is a civil rights issue. And I think most of us would agree that this is a perfect, you know, realization of our ideals to help and support people who have disabilities, severe disabilities. The question that we were asking is the system there supporting them in an appropriate manner?
And then the question I have for both of you is, whose responsibility is it to take care of these individuals? Is it the state? Is it the facility? Is it, when we're talking about deinstitutionalizing someone, I would imagine that also comes with more individual, the onus is now on the individual. Is that right?
That's the premise, yeah. And it's a full-on belief that everybody has not only the right, but the ability and the capacity to live alone. You know, there's nothing that distinguishes us as able-bodied people from people with serious mental illness. That's the baseline idea.
So responsibility for someone's success in this program has diffused among a variety of actors, and we've found that they all have a way of pointing fingers at each other when something goes wrong. For each person that moves out, there's somebody that's responsible for that person's housing. There's another nonprofit that's responsible for they're coordinating their medical care. There's somebody else that's responsible for their therapy and psychiatric services. There's somebody else that assessed that person and helped make the decision that they were ready and able to live on their own. And so when you find somebody like Bernard Walker who perished in these really grisly circumstances, it's really unclear who is to be held sort of accountable.
The Frontline and ProPublica joint investigation, Right to Fail, premieres tonight on PBS stations and online at pbs.org/frontline. And you can read related reporting at ProPublica.org. Tom Jennings is the director, and Joaquin Sapien is a correspondent for the film and a reporter with ProPublica. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.